This program is a production of the Reformed Forum, an organization devoted to producing and distributing Reformed theological content for a connected age. Online at reformedforum.org. This is Christ the Center, episode number 136. Today we speak with David Murray about technology and the Christian life. Welcome to Christ the Center, Doctrine for Life, your weekly conversation of Reformed theology. This is episode number 136. My name is Camden Busey. I'm very pleased to welcome to the program our good friend Nick Batzig, who is church planner at New Covenant PCA in Richmond Hill, Georgia. It's great to have you on, Nick. Thanks for coming.
Thanks, Camden. Good to be on.
We're also very pleased to welcome back to the program Michael DeWalt, who teaches theology, apologetics, and ethics at Redeemer Classical Christian School in Kingsville, Maryland. Welcome to the program, Michael.
Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, we're very excited to have you back on. He appeared on the program with Steve Lawson. He's also on an episode of the Reformed Media Review, so we're very excited to have Michael back to offer his input on today's subject. And that is going to be with a very special guest. We're pleased to welcome onto the program Dr. David P. Murray, who is professor of Old Testament and Practical Theology at Puritan Reformed Theological Seminary in the wonderful city of Grand Rapids, Michigan. It's great to have you on the program, Dr. Murray. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks, Camden. I appreciate all that you do in this. I try to regularly listen to the podcast and enjoy it very much, but never thought I'd be on it myself, but very privileged and honored to be so.
Oh, well, it's great to have you on. You might be the first guest who actually listens. We're honored to have you. And I want to let the listener know as well that Dr. Murray does a whole bunch of things. He's on a podcast with Tim Challey, some of you may listen to, called The Connected Kingdom. And he's got a website that we're going to be speaking about today and the associated media at headhearthand.org. And we'll get into that in a minute. But we have actually a few bits of news today. Nick, I want to kick things over to you as you have quite a big event coming up this weekend.
Sure. Thanks, Camden. Dr. Joel Beakey is going to be at Independent Presbyterian Church in Savannah, Georgia, so just about 30 minutes from where I am. And he'll be doing a conference on Saturday and then Sunday. I believe the name of the conference is Grow in Holiness. And so I just want to encourage anybody that's in the Southeast that can attend that conference to go. All of you probably know what a wonderful gift Dr. Beakey is to the church. And so I want to encourage and promote that. So
we also have a couple other conferences here I'd like to mention, and maybe I can get your input, Michael and David, about this PRTS conference that's going to be happening at the end of the week. It's the 2010 Puritan Reformed Conference titled The Beauty and Glory of Christ. Who are some of the guests and what are the subjects here? This is going to be August 26th through 28th at the Prince Conference Center.
Yeah, we've got a really great lineup of speakers coming. We have Rick Phillips, Al Martin, James Greer,
wow,
a couple from the UK, Ian D. Campbell and David Carmichael, in addition to the faculty members, Joel Beakey, Jerry Bilkis, new faculty member Bill Van Dudeward, and myself. And it's 3 days focused really on Christ, his beauty and his glory. And we're very excited about it. And we've got good numbers signing up. And it looks like it'll be a great few days of fellowship.
Wow. And that's coming up soon. Not as soon as the event at Independent. But if you get this and listen before that happens, why don't you sign up? And if you're in the area, head on over to Grand Rapids and join in on that. That sounds like a great conference. We also have one more conference to mention. We have, haven't been keeping up with our conference news, so I'm pleased to get a lot of this out there and let you listeners know about it. But Sebastian Heck, a friend of ours, some of you listeners may know, he's over in Deutschland doing some church planning work and development there in theology. He's written to us informing us of an upcoming conference, and he writes, "We are putting on the Heidelberg Conference for Reformed Theology, and this October it's going to be the first one. And they're going to actually turn it into an annual conference over there. And Derek Thomas and Carl Truman will be the main speakers this year. Herman Selderhaus, Joel Beakey, Michael Horton, R. Scott Clark, Lyle Bierma, and Danny Hyde will be the speakers in the future. So they've got quite a lineup coming up. And if you're looking way down in the road, if you'd like to plan a vacation for 2013, the 450th anniversary of the Heidelberg Catechism. They're going to put on a bigger conference in Heidelberg to commemorate the occasion. And in conjunction with that conference, they're going to be actually publishing a book on the Heidelberg Catechism, which is already in the making, with contributions by many authorities on the Heidelberg, both from the U.S. and from the continent. And if you don't read German, they also have an English language conference website at heidelbergconference.info. That's heidelbergconference.info. And they're doing some really wonderful work over there. And this conference is put on, see if I how good my German pronunciation is. It's put on by the Selbstständige Evangelische Reformierte Kirche, which is the Free Evangelical Reformed Church of Germany. It's an endeavor to plant confessional Reformed churches in Germany, particularly organized and hosted by the church plant in Heidelberg, Germany, which is pastored by none other than our friend Sebastian Heck. So that's a mouthful, but check it out. They've got a lot coming up, and info for that is at heidelbergconference.info. Are there any other news or updates we need to mention before we get started with today's episode? All right, if there's nothing else to mention today, let's move on to a very interesting subject. We're going to be talking of sorts about parenting and families and all the dynamics in a digital age, talking about technology and all the new advances in the last decade or two and how they impact the family and how all of those things need to be understood within a Christian worldview and within a Christian understanding of parenting and family in general. David, just to get started, let me ask you in general about headhearthand.org, and could you let us know a bit about what the mission is and the purpose of that website and some of the projects you're working on there?
Sure, Camden. I've been doing a blog for quite a while. It's a posterous blog called Head, Heart, Hand, and it's really, it's described there, it's material for the head to inform the mind, for the heart to move the affections, and for the hand for practical Christianity. But I wanted to just take that beyond the blog world and into more film media, mm-hmm. and try and communicate the same message, the Puritan emphasis of the head, the heart, and the hand, using this modern media. So we've set up this separate website called headhearthand.org, and we're going to use that as a vehicle for producing and distributing films, movies, podcasts in the coming years. And the first one we decided to work on was one called God's Technology. And it flowed out of an address I gave at Redeemer College University in Ontario last year. Mm. I gave a Reformation Day address basically on what would Calvin say about modern technology. And it was very challenging to sort of think, well, you know, what would Calvin say? And, you know, can we get a biblical basis for the way that we approach technology? And, well, I've got a growing family and teenage sons now, and you know, conscious of the opportunities and yet the great dangers of modern technology. So yeah. I wanted to think it out for myself as well. How should we as Reformed Christians approach this great subject?
Mm-hmm. There's been so many advances, and it can be so exciting to think about. Even what we're doing right now was just impossible maybe 6 years ago. But with all these great advances and the ease of communication and the accessibility of information, even in video, there come tremendous dangers and things we have to watch out for that weren't thinkable 10 years ago.
Mm. Well, my kind of motivation was, I'm conscious mothers and fathers are very busy. They don't really have a lot of time to be reading through, you know, 100, 200 page books.
Right.
And I thought, can I put together a 40, 45 minute address that would really be very practical, very down to earth, and give really important tools to them so that their children can benefit from the great blessings of modern technology without falling into the pitfalls?
Mm-hmm. And you talk a little bit about glorifying God with technology. How do you think of that as a confessional endeavor? We think about, you know, being Reformed theologians and people who subscribe to Reformed confessions. How can we as Reformed people think about technology in general and use it for the building up of God's kingdom?
Well, I start with four principles that I believe are drawn from the Bible. Number one being that technology is created by God. And I don't mean, you know, he created technology out of nothing, but that he created the physical elements
right.
that manufacturers use. He created the forces, the powers, the electricity, the magnetism that makes technology work. And he gave us the human minds that can put all these things together and invent them. Although, of course, you know, every invention has been already invented by God, and he just allows us to discover what he's already invented. So I think it's important to lay that foundation. It's created by God, and therefore it's not essentially sinful. I mean, the technology we're using to speak with one another today, it's no different than the technology of the internet, the right. telephone. And it's got many good uses. You know, just this itself, doing this kind of Christian discussion on the radio and on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But having said all that, you know, it's created by God. It's not essentially sinful. It's got many good uses. Yet I think we are taught in our Bibles that technology, like everything else, is going to be perverted and abused by sinners mm-hmm. because the devil spoils all God's good gifts. And I don't think I need to quote the statistics, do I, Camden?
No,
I think everyone knows it's...
some of the dangers that come, and it's so easy before, you know, obviously the biggest issue at hand is the issue of pornography. And we think about how prevalent that is. And before, at least there was a social stigma involved in having to go to a store or, you know, even a video rental place that has those, you know, shady back rooms or something. Yeah. And that's, you know, there was a stigma involved in involving yourself in that. But nowadays, with the privacy of your computer, and computers are becoming more and more accessible, and laptops can be taken anywhere, and mobile devices, people are having the ability to indulge and get trapped by this stuff anywhere they want without any of the necessary social, obvious or upfront social consequences.
That's right. One of the stats that I found just most staggering was that the largest group of viewers of internet porn is children between the ages of 12 and 17.
Yeah.
You know, that really says it all, doesn't it?
Well, you put the two together with all the hormones going on and the development and the interest and curiosity coupled with, you know, the prevalence of the material, it just really brings to the fore how important it is for parents to be on top of this. That leads me to ask you, how in the world can a parent sometimes it seems as though you can never keep up with a child and their technical yeah. abilities, how do parents go about trying to protect their children in a good way from some of these dangers?
Yeah, I think parents tend to react in maybe one of two extremes. The first is, I call it enthusiastic embrace, that just they accept and welcome everything. There's no thought about downsides, long-term consequences, anything, and everything goes. And I don't think that takes account of that fourth principle, that the devil has perverted and abused everything. And I doubt really any right-thinking Christian would go down that route long-term.
Mm-hmm.
But I think an opposite and equally dangerous extreme in a way is strict separation. You know, you kind of see the dangers and think, right, you know, I'm going to close my kids off from everything and ban them and forbid them. And I don't think that's realistic. And I don't think it prepares your kids for when they're away from your supervision.
Mm-hmm.
And they're almost going to outsmart us. they're more tech savvy than us.
Mm-hmm.
So that is not an option either. That's why I call the proper Christian response, and I took it from Tim Challey's book, really, The Discipline of Spiritual Discernment, and that
yeah.
is the root of disciplined discernment, the training our children in the daily discipline of distinguishing between true and false, right and wrong, good and bad. And the DVD I put together is really focused on, right, well, that sounds good. What does that mean in practice? You know, what are the steps that we can use to get our children to that point of disciplined discernment?
Now, the title of that is God's Technology, correct?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so people can take a look at that, and we don't want to spoil everything by going through all of your points in detail, but you can visit the website headhearthand.org for that, titled God's Technology. Pornography is very prevalent, the online video especially, and all that stuff going on. But what about social networking? How has social networking impacted our personal, interpersonal relationships, and what are some things there that parents and friends should know and understand when they engage in social networking?
Camden, I think that's a great question because everyone automatically goes to pornography. Oh, that's a big danger. But I think when you look at the trivia and the time that is being wasted on social media, that is sinful too, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not so obviously of the devil, but the devil is definitely using it. I got permission to use a video in our film from Socialnomics. Eric Coleman is the author of Socialnomics. He created a video, you'll probably get it online, which just presents staggering statistics on the use of social media. So when we show that in the film, and then we apply the 7-step training program to Facebook. And I think that is maybe the most helpful thing for a lot of parents. At least that's the response I've had so far. It's maybe easier to you to deal with pornography than the sort of more subtle difficulties of Facebook.
Yeah, it's much more obvious. I mean, you see it. You know, when somebody's chatting away or playing games and it starts to eat away their day and take their minds away from things that would be better spent, time better spent. It can be more deceptive because it's not as obvious, I think.
I don't think it should be totally negative either, Camden.
No.
I love technology. I just, it leads me to worship God. When you think of the mind that's behind it all, mm-hmm. and it's just given us little snippets to discover.
It's really the kind of fit in with man's task and man's purpose in this world. If we think about what technology is, it's really a harnessing of God's creation to put it to use to glorify him. It's more tools and abilities for man's, and it's an outlet of man's creativity to help him in his labors. It's a common grace, I think, in that sense, but also to glorify God in ways that we were unable to before. We wouldn't even be able to talk to people about theology as we're doing now, and we like to think that it helps people and encourages them. That's why we do it, and it's one way, hopefully, that we can glorify God there. So you're right. But it becomes difficult when we engage. When so often these technologies end up being used for not so great purposes.
Yeah, I think we have to face up to the fact as parents as well that Our children need new hearts. They're born with a love of darkness, and they're going to be attracted to the dark side of the internet. Mm-hmm. So, we can do these training programs and put steps in place and, try and put up safeguards there. But at the end of the day, we are praying fervently for their conversion, that the Lord would give them new hearts, new desires, new passions for truth and light and holiness. And really, that's our ultimate aim in this, because, there's going to come a day when we're not going to be hovering over their shoulders and checking their email. Right. And the best firewall is a new heart.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You can always look for technological solutions, but the heart's the main issue. And there's always going to be a way around it. And if that heart's the problem, and that comes with a healthy pneumatology, a doctrine of the spirit, sanctification and prayer. Mm-hmm. And that's really ultimately where we need to go to fix the problem. But that doesn't stop us from taking some practical steps up front and doing what we can. Now, Nick, I wanted to get your input here on this subject. Did you have a question for Dr. Murray?
Well, I just wanted to say, I remember, Dr. Murray, when your colleague, Joel Beakey, said in one class, he took up a book and he said, I love to read. he said, but every time I pick up a book, I say, is reading this book the best use of my time? That really struck me that we're so careless in all spheres of life. I think about my own church and the people that the Lord's, you know, committed to my care, and you know, they watch a lot of TV, read a lot of books, and that's fine, and there's a lot you can learn, and that's good, but I want them, you know, to read the best things, and as I need myself to read the best things. And I think with the internet, if you apply that same approach, which is what you're saying, even with time management, is this the best use of my time? I mean, when I pick up a phone, do I really need to call this person? They may be a good friend, but having access to everybody at one time is not always helpful.
I know, Nick. Yeah. But, you know, again, I benefit from your use of technology. I enjoy your tweets, I enjoy your blog, I enjoy your podcast, and I find it very edifying. So you just keep using it, Nick.
Well, thank you. Likewise.
Has Michael fallen asleep there?
No, this, Michael's here.
Well, maybe is this what, hopefully not what he did in your class.
Oh. I won't tell you what Michael did. It had something to do with social networking most of the time.
You know, that brings up an interesting point, because we like to fashion ourselves as multitaskers, but I have some professors that say up front in the syllabus, you know, I expect that you don't use X, Y, and Z in the classroom, and I'm fine with that, and I think it's good because we need to be there paying attention. But what is this doing to our minds just in general? We've talked about the obvious pitfalls of pornography. We know there's nothing good that comes out of that. We've talked about the time-wasting factor and that we could be spending our time better. But what about the effect upon our mind and even the way we think? What is social networking and the internet and being consumed with media doing to our heads?
It's a great question. I think the answer to it varies. Now, somebody like Michael DeWalt will tell you it's improved his mind, okay? It's made him an even greater genius than he is.
Probably true.
But for me, I can't, you know, for me to produce anything worthwhile, I need a 3-4-5 hour stretch of time uninterrupted. So, you know, for me, it's got to be off with email, off with Twitter, off with blogs, off with the internet, off with the phone, and isolation. And,
I'd never get anything done.
You know, Michael thrives in all the interruptions. So for me, I know that it damages my productivity and my usefulness. Uh-huh. I think for most people, I know there are exceptions. Michael may be one. But I don't know if he's tried too much to see how much he might produce even more if he had a 3-hour block of time uninterrupted.
You know, I've brought it up before in previous episodes, and it's a favorite thing of mine. When I read Neil Postman's book, Amusing Ourselves to Death, he makes a case that every new technology brings with it epistemological change. And just one simple example, he talks about the wristwatch. Now, before the wristwatch, people used to order their days and they used to schedule things event by events. They say, well, after breakfast, I'll do this. After the harvest, I will do this. Or at sundown, we will do this. With the advent of the wristwatch, now people started to divide their days into hours, minutes, and seconds. And the world, especially America, encountered a change in just the way they think. Same with the telegraph, and we could say the same now for blogs and Twitter. It brings with it an epistemological influence, whether we like it or not. And Postman's argument is not that we do away with all this stuff, but that we just hopefully understand that different media have different impacts on our thinking. And I just think it's crucial that we do the same when we engage with social media and all sorts of things. But oh, it's awful helpful and handy if we use it in the right way. We just need to know, I think, what way that is. Another thing, I love technology too, and I keep up with This Week in Tech and the whole Twit Network. For some of the listeners who might know, it's actually where I get all my ideas from. I'm going to give away a secret there. But one of the big things in the tech journalism world at the moment is this issue of privacy. And in recent years, especially concerning the news about Facebook and Google Street View, all these other things, privacy rights are finding their way into mainstream discussions. And I wanted to ask you how we go about doing biblical parenting in the light of recent privacy considerations. Do your children have a right to certain types of privacy or not? How do we engage in biblical parenting while this world might have a certain notion of privacy?
There are two rules, I think. One is the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do to you. But there's also the silicon rule, which I think is very important. And that is, don't do anything online that you wouldn't do offline.
Interesting.
In other words, you know, you wouldn't walk up to a stranger on the street and give them your, you know, name, telephone number, where you live, some details about yourself. So, you know, should we change that when we go online? I think we have to really hesitate before we do that.
That's interesting.
That's what I try and encourage my children to think about anyway.
Yeah, that's helpful, especially in social media. What if we flip the privacy concern? We think about a child who might react to your monitoring their internet usage, saying, hey, you know, I should have some privacy here, Dad. Why are you snooping in on what I'm doing?
Yeah. I think it depends on their age. Again, let's think of the real world. You know, we don't know every conversation that our children have with their friends in the school and at church or whatever. So, you know, really we shouldn't know every conversation they have with their friends online. However, I think you do need to train your children. So, for example, I would recommend that you friend your children on Facebook, you know, as they begin, and you go over it every few weeks, months, say, right, okay, that's a good use of it, right? You know, is this really a wise use of it? Is this the kind of friend you would have in real life? Okay, though, why have it on Facebook?
Right.
And you hopefully, just as you would with friends in the real world. Look, Johnny, you really think this is a good friend to have? Let's think about that and like pull away from him. And so you're just trying to translate some of that online. I don't think the rules should change too much. And then hopefully as you're, you know, they're maturing, they're learning, then they become their own sort of filter and firewall.
A friend of mine is a pastor here in Pennsylvania, and he always tells he's a speaker at a Christian summer camp, and he always tells people he doesn't like being Facebook friends with the campers because then he has to read what they write, and he's obligated to confront them about their sin.
Yeah,
and he says it humorously, but he's serious as well. There's much more than a grain of truth there, and it's odd how once we enter the digital world, we somehow think that, you know, the rules of decency are different.
I know, it's true. I must say, Camden, you've touched an important issue there, because I've been friended by a number of young people in various churches that I've preached in. And, you know, then, of course, I start seeing some of the things they're posting, some of the music they're listening to, some of the movies they're watching. And I'm not just framing an opinion of them through that. I'm also thinking, man, what kind of home is that? You know, what kind of parents are they? So it doesn't just reflect on the child. It's the parents too. Their reputation is at stake. And in some cases, the father's a minister, a pastor. So again, you have to teach your children, look, this is not just you that's involved here. This is us as a family, me as a pastor.
Right. I mean, I also think, too, we have DirecTV in our home, and I know there's a lot of people that have different opinions about television. But if I had all of the adult channels that I praise God we don't have coming through DirecTV, I would be doing my children a disservice to have all that in my home. Now, I can't guard with the internet what sites come through. There are billions and billions probably of websites. I don't even know how many there are. And I can't filter that except by putting Covenant Eyes, X3 Watch, you know, some kind of accountability software where everyone in the house is protected. So maybe just for me personally, I feel like I'm accountable to protect myself, my wife, and my children, just like I am with what television channels I bring in. Would you think that's a helpful parallel, or are there weaknesses to that?
No, I agree, Nick. And it was actually you that put me onto Covenant Eyes. I think we talked when you were up at Grand Rapids a while ago, and I mentioned how I tried a few and they were really complicated to get to work and some were oversensitive. And I think it was you that put me onto Covenant Eyes, and I found it wonderful. It's a really helpful tool. My wife is now my accountability partner and I'm hers, and we see the children's reports. And yeah, I take that very seriously because you're right, we are the ultimate gatekeeper of our homes and we have to get in there and filter what's coming in.
Yeah, and now with Droids and iPhones, I know things have gotten crazy. I actually have a Droid and have X3 Watch because Covenant Eyes has not yet made a filter for it. So I know those things are even being developed now and technology is sort of racing. And it's going to be interesting to see as technology develops if filtering sites can even keep up with all the avenues for these things. So
yeah,
I'm thankful for them.
It's a huge challenge, Nick, because you know when we were, well, at least when I was growing up, we hardly had computers, and you know, so the big danger was TV. So your parents could be fairly sure you're not walking out the door with a TV under your arm in the morning,
right?
But nowadays, our kids are walking out. Well, not mine yet, thankfully, but it's coming. You know, with the cell phone in their pocket, and that's the way most young people are accessing the internet today. And it's far more threatening than anything we had in television in our day. And so, yeah, you can have all your screens visible in the home, and you know, have all your home software, and yet they're walking out with this thing in their pocket that's almost invisible, and yet can do them so much harm.
I know.
I think that verse of Paul's really is just a continual challenge to me. Evil communications corrupt good manners. And just to try and train our children, you become what you watch, you become what you hear. There's a direct correlation.
Dr. Murray, at what age would you give your children a cell phone? This is something I've been thinking about. I have a 3.5-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a 25-day-old, and I'm not giving them one at 3.5. I know that, but now the age seems to be getting lower and lower. We have families in our home from the churches, and the kids are, some of them may be 6 or 7, and their friends all have cell phones at school. And that's just, wow. I mean, I grew up in the 90s. I was in high school, and
I didn't have a cell phone until I was a sophomore in college.
Right. So at what age, I mean, what's your personal thought about that? I'm not asking you to make a law, but...
Yeah, I know. Well, as Michael knows, I'm not a great fan of phones anyway. I find they just interrupt me all the time. So nobody has my cell phone number, and the cell phone I have doesn't even access the internet as far as I know. So that's one way. Just give them a phone. not this, you know, one thing does everything for you.
And they even sell these little phones now that can call home, or maybe you could program it to call one or two numbers. That might be something that, you know, for a 6-year-old, you could, if you need, if you really wanted them to, you know, for emergency purposes, just snap it to the backpack or something. But
I mean, I don't even want to give my 15-year-old a cell phone.
No, I know. My oldest son now, Nick, is 14 and he doesn't have one yet. He's asked a couple of times, but if he's going out somewhere, I'll give him my own, just for security and safety. But
that's good.
I just don't think he's a good lad, but I don't think he's ready for it.
Yeah. Is it really necessary? And with the advances in technology, and it becomes a, you know, we just assume that we have to have it and can't live life without it anymore. And that's not always the case. 10, 20 years ago, we would have been doing our lives just fine, living our lives just fine without being able to email and call and text and Twitter everybody at every second.
Yeah.
Speaking of living lives just fine without it, what would you, David, say to the individual that says, technology, you know, it's not up my alley. I don't really deal with it much. I'm not going to. I never had to before.
A Luddite.
You know. So what am I doing? What do you say to those type of people today?
I know it's very challenging, and I think that is an understandable response, but it's not a responsible response. It's a cop-out. It's not realistic. I really believe we have a duty as parents to get informed and get involved. I think I recommend in the film getnetwise.org. It's a really simple website with really simple articles that just highlight the big issues. And, you know, you don't need any great intelligence to understand some basics that I think is responsible. You know, you've got the Deuteronomy talks about putting a fence around your flat roof. Well, no big problem in Grand Rapids, but I think the modern day application is to fence your home against the dangers of technology and your kids falling off, as it were, and into a pit of sin. So, yeah, understandable, but not responsible.
I wonder also, just adding to that, if we're not setting our children up for harm, if we don't teach them how to use and do what you're doing, which I'm so thankful for you teaching this, because I sometimes see the Christian community almost responding to this like the Amish responded to electricity. And I know that's an extreme comparison, but, you know, we are living in this world, and Christ did say, you know, pray that you take them not out of the world, but that you keep them from the evil one. And so it seems like we have to teach our children how to use technology wisely into God's glory. Otherwise, they're going to be disengaged completely from the world in which they live in.
Yeah. I think it's such an easy response to get a bit too negative about this as well. Let's not leave our kids in a vacuum. Let's fill it with good. Let's direct them to websites and blogs that are edifying, that are at their level, that they can enjoy. I encourage my own boys to write blogs. One of them's really keen in hunting. The other's really keen on snowboarding and skateboarding. So they write little blogs and, you know, put up videos, and they love doing it. Their friends watch it, and I think it fills a need, and it gives them that thrill of creation and invention and learning and progress and broadcasting and communicating. They're going to do it, so let's give them good things to do, and let's direct them to good sermons and good online podcasts and whatnot. Let's keep it positive as well, not just negative.
Yeah.
David, you made mention of the DVD again and the steps, and I believe I had read a year ago, me and Derek, your producer that helps you all the time with making these, that what you watch, you usually only memorize about 20% of what you watch, and so you plan to go the DVD route instead of writing a book. Does the DVD come with anything else, like a study guide, something that the parents can use that you could tell our audience?
Yeah, I think the stats are even higher, Michael, especially with younger generation. It's something like 10% of what we read, we remember, and it's closer to 70 or 80% of what we watch, we can remember. And of course, the best way of remembering and learning is doing. That takes you up to 90%+. That's why, yes, we put together a study guide. It's also downloadable. It's free from the website, which sort of, okay, you've watched it, now put this into practice. Think this through. Here are some practical scenarios that you're going to face. How are you going to work through them biblically and prayerfully with your children? I think it's really important, not just, oh, that was kind of an interesting film, now back to normal, but to really say, right, force myself to change and to make things better for myself and my family.
Yes, and what other, you're filming some other projects. Your website makes mention of Introduction to Covenant Theology. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what you plan to do how that's going to come out?
Yeah, we're working on that just now. We're filming a second part of it on Wednesday. The thing I would have to say that opened up the Old Testament to me was O. Palmer Robertson, Christ of the Covenants. It was revolutionary to me. But it's still pitched at quite a high level. Really, seminary students, highly educated lay people, really are only going to benefit from that. I wanted something, some introduction to covenant theology that would be accessible to a much wider range of people, and, you know, who don't have Greek and Hebrew and who don't, you know, can't work through all the different theologies and systems. So this is our hope that this film, which is takes the Old Testament covenants, the six of them, seven of them, if you include the Covenant of Works, and the New Covenant, so there's eight episodes, and really works through each one with video, with animation, and it's called God's Windows because we're taking the symbols of the covenants, the defeated serpent of Genesis 3, the rainbow of Noah, the knife of Abraham, and so on, and using that as windows which let in light to lots of people in the world. You know, the Noahic covenant benefits so many people in the world, etc. And yet, it doesn't save anyone. To be saved, you have to look through the window at what the window symbolized. So, for example, the New Testament covenant symbols of bread and wine. You know, to be in the church and to be a church member brings a lot of benefits, but it doesn't save. You can sit at the Lord's table and be unconverted, but if you look through the bread and the wine, you, by faith, see what they symbolized, a crucified, bleeding, dying Savior, and you put your trust in that, then you are saved. So we're trying to present the covenants with this concept that they let in light, that benefit, in some cases, the whole world, in some cases, Israel, in some cases, the church, but not savingly in any case, unless the people who see the signs and symbols look through them to what these signs and symbols symbolized.
Dr. Murray, what else are you working on currently besides the Covenant Theology series for DVD?
Oh, is that not enough? Okay, I've got a book coming out in a couple of weeks. It's called Christians Get Depressed Too. It's a short, practical book to help people suffering with depression and those who care for them and those who pastor them. Again, I just felt there was a lot out there with quite large books and detailed books, but not really sort of crisis books, 911 books. And so that's out in a couple of weeks, and hope it'll do some good.
That's wonderful to hear about that that new book, and it should be very helpful because so often, as you have already keyed in on, it's difficult, and if somebody comes to you with a problem, you know, giving them a 300-page book isn't always the best way to love them in that instant. So helping them with a shorter piece might be much more appropriate. Well, we want to thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Murray. This has been a pleasure. I wish we could talk to you for a while. We've got to get going, unfortunately, but thank you. This has been great.
Well, thank you, Camden, Nick, and Michael. It's been great to join you.
Well, let me point everyone back to the website, of course, at headhearthand.org. You can also visit the seminary at puritanseminary.org. And there's a wealth of information on both of those sites, and you can find out information at the headhearthand.org website about these DVDs and about purchasing them. And stay tuned there for all the future projects that Dr. Murray will be up to. And they're very well done, very impressed. So kudos to you and to your team. And we hope that as people listen, they would visit the website and pick up some of these and hopefully be helped as a result.
Thanks very much, Camden.
Sure. We also can visit Nick at feedingonchrist.com. And Michael DeWalt, it's Gospel Centered Musings, correct?
That is correct.
And what's the address for that?
GospelCenteredMusings.com.
Exactly. He's a good man. He has a blog named after the domain of his site. And, just like feedingonchrist.com. And, of course, Reformed Forum is available at reformedforum.org. And also, let me tell you about reformedforum.tv. If you haven't visited that new website, another one in our programming lineup, and we hope to have video there, hopefully live video of our episodes here in the very near future. So visit reformedforum.tv right now, and there's some videos of Carl Truman up there, one in which he answers some rapid fire questions. It's kind of fun. So visit that, reformedforum.tv. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you join us again next time on Christ the Center.